from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen from New Orleans, Louisiana, because, you know, at some point you just got to seek out the warmth. This week, President Bush stood side by side with President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan at a White House news conference. President Karzai was the one in the shiny green robe. And President Bush took the following question, to which he gave the following answer.
Mr. President, as you know, the casualties of Iraq is getting high today, 50 more people dying. Do you think that insurgents is getting harder now to defeat militarily?
Yes.
Thank you.
No, I don't think so. I think they're being defeated, and that's why they continue to fight.
That's the good news, ladies and gentlemen. They're being defeated. That's why they're bombing and doing the thing with the thing, which suggests that we're winning the war on drugs because people are using so many of them. We're winning the war on poppy cultivation in Afghanistan, which would explain why they're planting so much of it. Planting so much of it, I say. And it would, I don't know what would explain the decision of the Iraqi Defense Ministry this week to announce 4 or 5 days in advance their big new program to provide 40,000 Iraqi police and army troops to wipe out the insurgency in Baghdad, giving the insurgents only 4 or 5 days warning to clear out before the government clamps down in the city. Advance notice for the clampdown, ladies and gentlemen, because courtesy counts. Hello, welcome to the show.
Perfect partner. All they were dancing in that ballroom
From the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And first off, ladies and gentlemen, I owe you, don't get excited, I owe you a correction. Now, the interesting thing is that nobody brought this to my attention. No listener, no aggrieved party. It's just I happened to notice it myself in the course of my peregrinations this week. Thank you very much. And felt obliged, you know, because satirist, mock thyself, something like that. So I said at the end of last week's broadcast, mentioning that this program is heard on channel 108 of Sirius Satellite Radio, I believe I said, home of Opie and Anthony. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please, 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 don't be misled. Sirius Satellite Radio is going to be the home of shock jock Howard Stern when he's good and ready, or they're good and ready, or somebody's good, or somebody's bad and ready. But it is not, has not, will not be the home of New York shock jocks Opie and Anthony. I don't know what I was thinking. Well, I do know what I was thinking of, but it wasn't Sirius Satellite Radio. So a correction and my apologies, which would be a cue for one or another copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Let's see which one it is.
Los Angeles Dog Trainer Corrections for you.
Oh, almost my favorite. Maybe my favorite. My favorite. Ladies and gentlemen, Los Angeles Dog Trainer Corrections. By the way, a listener wrote in correcting me on an error in last week's dog trainer corrections, thinking that I was the person who was fact-checking the dog trainer. I'm not. These are their corrections that they publish. So he was correcting a correction that they published of their own. You see what I'm saying? TV movie listings. The caption on a photograph in the Today's Movies Guide in Saturday's calendar section said the scene with Danny Glover and Oprah Winfrey was from The Color Purple. The photograph was of a scene from Beloved. In the Valley edition of Thursday's calendar weekend section, an item about the Los Angeles Sister City Festival at the Page Museum Gardens listed it as a Saturday event. In fact, the festival was Sunday. Hope that didn't screw up your weekend. An article in Saturday's section A on a hidden text of Archimedes, a 3rd century BC mathematician and inventor, identified him as Italian. Although he was born in Sicily, Archimedes was Greek. In a review in Monday's calendar section of Peter Lieberson's Neruda Songs at Walt Disney Concert Hall, the composer's name was misspelled in a headline as Lieberman. That's right. They misspelled Lieberson as Lieberman. Some of us would say that would be getting the name wrong, but no, it's just a misspelling, you see, in a dog trainer correction department. An article that appeared in a May 17th outdoor section about closing trails to off-road vehicles in El Dorado National Forest erroneously referred to the forest as a park. But wait, there's more. You knew there was going to be more. You knew it couldn't close with that. A May 1 Los Angeles Times Magazine article, that's a fine magazine, about film critic David Thompson reported that Thompson's father had sparred with boxing heavyweight champion Max Baer. In fact, he was a sparring partner for British boxer Tom Haney. The article also said that the third edition of Thompson's biographical dictionary of film was published in 1996. It was, in fact, published in 1994. And the article reported that Thompson showed personal courage in his friendship with gay documentary filmmaker Kieran Hickey because of anti-gay sentiments in London in the 1960s. In fact, Hickey was not openly gay at the time. A photo caption in Thursday's calendar weekend section with an article about summer television misidentified a contestant on the unscripted WB series Beauty and the Geek as Crystal. The contestant shown is Mindy. Apparently they don't use last names on Beauty and the Geek. A May 19th article in Section A about two brothers' involvement in the Iraq insurgency said the Euphrates River runs through the city of Mosul. In fact, the river that runs through Mosul is the Tigris. There are only two rivers in Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. They were so close to being right. And finally, a May 20th article in Section A about a hurricane in Central America referred to President Ricardo Maduro. It failed to say that Maduro is president of Honduras. Didn't say what he was president of, ladies and gentlemen. Not really necessary when it's Los Angeles Dog Trainer Corrections for you.
Los Angeles Dog
directions for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, nothing goes better on a first holiday weekend of the summer than a tall, cool glass of news from outside the bubble. First of all, from Hamid Karzai, the green-robed president of Afghanistan who visited the White House this week to meet with President, what is it, Bush? Yeah, still. Interesting. Just to clarify, Karzai downplayed the notion that Newsweek magazine article about Koran flushing at Guantanamo led to deadly rioting in Afghanistan, thereby contradicting several senior officials of the Bush administration, the administration of the president beside whom he was standing at the time. In a green robe, ladies and gentlemen. Quote, those demonstrations were in reality not related to the Newsweek story, Karzai said. They were more against the elections in Afghanistan. They were more against the progress in Afghanistan. We know who did it. We know the guys, he said. He also pressed his, while he was with Bush, he pressed his case for the release of Afghan detainees from Guantanamo. Bush committed only to an orderly case-by-case review of the detainees. It's very orderly down there. If there were trains. While Karzai attempted to downplay the impact that reports of prisoner mistreatment have had on the public, Laura Bush conceded during a four-day tour of the Middle East this week that photographs of the Abu Ghraib prison abuses and recently leaked photos of Saddam in his underpants have been, quote, particularly damaging to the image of the United States in the region. Interesting. Particularly damaging to our image. You'd think that would have... Ladies and gentlemen, the new Iraq. Latest figures presented to an art crime conference in London this week by John Curtis of the British Museum suggested that half of the 40 iconic items from the Iraq National Museum in Baghdad still had not been retrieved. Of at least 15,000 items looted from its storerooms, about 8,000 have yet to be traced. 4,000 of the objects have been recovered in Iraq, but about 1,000 have been confiscated in the U.S., 500 in France, 250 in Switzerland, and 200 in Jordan, illustrating the international demand for Iraqi antiquities. Random checks on Western soldiers leaving the area had found some in illegal possession of ancient artifacts, he said. So there was looting. They did lose their artifacts. Interesting. We had thought. However, this just in this week from The Guardian, this made some of the other papers around the world. I don't know if anybody else here pointed out to you that the guy, the Republican congressman from North Carolina, who was the brains behind changing the name of French fries to Freedom Fries in the House of Representatives cafeteria, Walter Jones, has turned against the war. He told a local newspaper that the United States went to war, quote, with no justification, unquote. He said that the letter he circulated demanding that the House cafeterias ban French from their menus was meant as a, quote, lighthearted gesture, despite the fact that it made headlines around the world. Asked by a reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer about the name change campaign, an idea that he said at the time came by a combination of God's hand and a constituent's request, he replied, quote, I wish it had never happened. He voted for the war, but he's become one of the most vociferant opponents of it on Capitol Hill. If we were given misinformation intentionally by people in this administration to commit the authority to send boys and in some instances girls to go into Iraq, that is wrong, he told the newspaper. Congress must be told the truth. Here's some truth. BBC World Monitoring says Al Dawa, a newspaper in Iraq, reports that the cabinet in Iraq has decided to form a financial committee headed by, anybody want to guess? That's right, the gentleman in the third row, Deputy Prime Minister Ahmed Chalabi. It will be responsible for reviewing all the contracts signed by various state institutions. Chalabi's in charge of all government contracts in Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, a step up from his previous post as temporary head of the oil ministry. It's good work, Ahmed. Keep it up, babe. We've got your back. Ladies and gentlemen, lawyer for the United States government in a lawsuit trying to get more of the Abu Ghraib photographs released to the public. A lawsuit in which the judge agreed that some additional Abu Ghraib photographs should be released. The government lawyer, the guy, we're paying all these people. It's a game we're financing. But the lawyer for the government, Sean Lane, argued that releasing pictures, more pictures from Abu Ghraib, even if faces and other features are obscured, would violate the Geneva Convention rules on prisoner treatment by subjecting detainees to additional humiliation or embarrassment. These are the same detainees who are complaining about mistreatment because the United States decided they weren't subject to the Geneva Convention, ladies and gentlemen. He said the government lawyer, said the emotional wounds would be reopened because detainees could identify themselves and because the public would learn their identities. It's a new caring government we have, suddenly. Never too late, huh? Federal Judge Alvin Hellerstein, however, said, I don't believe with suitable redaction there is an unwarranted invasion of privacy, saying he didn't think it was likely that detainees in redacted photos would be able to be identified. But thanks so much for your concern, Sean. Ladies and gentlemen, defense chiefs in Britain are planning to rush thousands of British troops to Afghanistan to try to stop the country from sliding towards what? Civil war, according to the Scotsman? The Scotsman. Interesting. Oh, I've said that three times now. It's all interesting. Ministers of the government have been warned, not ministers of the church. They face a, quote, complete strategic failure, unquote, of the effort to rebuild Afghanistan. And that 5,500 extra troops will be needed within months if the situation continues to deteriorate. An explosive cocktail of feuding tribal warlords, insurgents, remnants of the Taliban, and underperforming Afghan institutions has left the fledgling democracy on the verge of disintegration, according to the newspaper The Scotsman, quoting analysts and senior officers who don't have names. Uh-oh. Don't tell Michael Isikoff. Don't tell reporter with no name. The looming crisis in Afghanistan is a serious setback for the U.S.-led war on terror. This according to this newspaper. Defense analysts say U.K. forces are already so overstretched that any operation to restore order in Afghanistan can only succeed if substantial numbers of troops are redeployed from Iraq. Cute news, huh? Don't blame me. Blame the Scots. Blame the journalists in kilts. You can find them easily. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we've had an apology and corrections. Now some apologetic corrections and some correctional apologies on the copyrighted feature of the broadcast I call the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Missouri Governor Matt Blunt took issue this week with comments by the state's transportation director about opponents of Missouri's motorcycle helmet law. Transportation Director Pete Ron was quoted in a newspaper saying motorcyclists who pushed to repeal the mandatory helmet law seemed as though they hadn't bathed in 2 weeks. Unquote. The bill failed. Blunt issued a statement today saying the transportation department should focus on fixing Missouri's roads, not picking fights with interest groups. And Transportation Director Ron put out a statement apologizing for what he called an inappropriate comment. He's dead meat. Dateline Helena, Montana. University of Montana dean has apologized to the head of a large media company in Atlanta for releasing a letter from the Executives Foundation that suggested Montana residents have poor attitudes about out-of-state landowners. The dean's apology was ordered by the university's president, leading to criticism that he instead should have upheld the public's right to know. The letter from journalism dean Jerry Brown arrived at the office of James Kennedy, chairman of Cox Enterprises, head of a foundation that declined to help finance University of Montana's new journalism building. The foundation's rejection letter last month said money would not be given in Montana until its non-resident landowners are more appreciated. Don't want to step on that any further than I already have. Waxahachie, Texas. The Texas school district has apologized to a student identified in a high school yearbook photo only as, quote, black girl, unquote. All the white students are identified by name in a photograph of the Waxahachie High School National Honor Society. The teen identified as black girl is the only African-American student in the photo. A school spokeswoman says the caption apparently was intended as a placeholder until the yearbook staff could identify the student. The school district will reprint the yearbook pages affected by the mistake. Spokane Mayor James West has again denied he molested two boys decades ago and rejected a demand by local business leaders that he resign for the good of the city. In his first public comments in 2 weeks, West apologized to residents apparently for trolling a gay website. A former conservative state legislator who opposed gay rights, West denied using city-owned equipment for visiting that site. Charles Schwab Corporation this week settled its false advertising lawsuit with rival TD Waterhouse, which apologized for commercials that lumped Schwab with higher price security firms and criticized its customer service. Waterhouse agreed to stop running the television ads, which featured actor Sam Waterston of Law & Order fame, the company said in a brief statement. Former NFL player Pat Tillman's family is lashing out against the Army, saying the military's investigations into Tillman's friendly fire death in Afghanistan last year were a sham, and that Army efforts to cover up the truth have made it harder for them to deal with their loss. Army officials said Friday the Army reaffirms its heartfelt sorrow to the Tillman family and all families who've lost loved ones during this war. Brigadier General Vincent K. Brooks, an Army spokesman, said the Army acts with compassion and heartfelt commitment when informing grieving families. Quote, in the case of the death of Corporal Patrick Tillman, the Army made mistakes in reporting the circumstances of his death. For these, we apologize, Brooks said. We cannot undo those early mistakes. A Baptist pastor decided to apologize and take down a sign outside his church that suggested that the Koran should be put in the toilet. In the face of national media attention and overwhelmingly negative response, including a critique from the head of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee, Pastor Creighton Loveless issued a written statement saying that he did not believe how people of the Muslim faith view the Quran, that devoted Muslims view it more highly than many in the U.S. view the Bible. Now I realize, his statement went on, how offensive this is to them, and after praying, I have chosen to remove the sign. I apologize for posting that message and deeply regret that it has offended so many in the Muslim community. The sign up outside Danieltown Baptist Church said, quote, the Quran needs to be flushed, exclamation point, unquote. Although Loveless stood his ground early in the week, saying he knew the sign would be offensive, his statement on Wednesday said his intentions were to, quote, exalt the Bible and its teaching. It was certainly not my intent to insult any people or faith. Speaking of which, Family Christian Stores has apologized for a promotion of Rick Warren's The Purpose-Driven Life that some customers criticized for capitalizing on a tragedy. The book's sales spiked in March after an Atlanta resident told the media she read from the book while being held hostage by an alleged killer. The chain sent out a letter to its customers saying, it was not our intent to minimize or capitalize on the tragic events in Atlanta. We feel strongly that the books and our products we sell can bring light to a dark world. We deeply regret the fact that attaching an offer to purchase Pastor Warren's book was viewed as offensive or in poor taste by some of our customers. President Bush bored Brittany Fish to tears this week, prompting the leader of the free world to apologize to the little girl for being so dull. Quote, I don't think she's old enough to realize who she was meeting, said her stepfather, laughing. Brittany, who is 7, was abducted from her scooter a year ago and found alive a day later. She was in Washington to meet the president in honor of National Missing Children's Day. Bush apparently launched into a rather long-winded speech about the significance of the Oval Office. Brittany, usually a bundle of giggles, got antsy, complained she was bored, then started to cry. This is according to her stepfather. After the meeting, the president called Brittany over. He apologized for being so boring and gave her a presidential pin, the stepfather reported. Dateline Miami, the varsity basketball coach at Gulliver Prep School in Miami has resigned in the wake of locker room behavior that engulfed him in controversy. Coach Laser Collazo reportedly dropped his pants in the locker room after his team lost to Florida Christian on April 7th. He reportedly took his penis out of his pants and accused his players of not having the testicular fortitude it takes to play baseball, according to the Miami Herald. According to a Coral Gables police report, Collazo pointed to his penis testicles and asked the team if they had a set of these or were they equipped with a vagina. Gulliver Prep released a statement this week following his resignation, saying that the coach acted in a highly inappropriate manner. Coach Collazo has personally apologized to his players and their parents. I know he deeply regrets his conduct. Deeply. And some radio apologies, ladies and gentlemen, to finish up. Broadcasting apologies. The E Network deeply regrets that a draft report from E Online, which contains some false information regarding the Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson marriage, was accidentally disseminated. This couple has not filed for divorce. E apologizes to Nick, Jessica, their families, and their fans for any distress this may have caused. We don't want to distress Nick and Jessica's fans. And Sid Rosenberg, midday co-host on the sports station WFAN in New York and an anchor on Imus in the Morning, the syndicated show, has been fired from the Imus show 1 week after he made remarks about popular Australian singer and cancer patient Kylie Minogue. He will not be returning to the Imus in the Morning show, according to Infinity Radio. He'd been suspended from the show since May 19th, the day after he made a comment that Minogue, who underwent treatment for breast cancer last week, quote, won't look so pretty when she's bald with one titty, unquote. Sid Rosenberg. Rosenberg apologized on the air and said he would donate a week's salary to a breast cancer foundation, but that apparently wasn't good enough for Infinity. And finally, final radio apology of the week. These, you know, we're breaking the envelope. We're not pushing it. We've broken it. Talk show station WKXW-FM in New Jersey, Trenton, New Jersey, hosts Craig Carton and Ray Rossi have apologized on the air for comments they recently made about a Korean-American running for mayor of a local town. Man to man, I'm sorry, Carton told Jun Choi, who was in the studio. The intent was never to hurt you personally or hurt your campaign. He also apologized to listeners who were offended. Choi accepted their apology, according to the Associated Press. At issue were the comments made on the pair's show April 25th, said Carton at one point, no specific minority group or foreign group should ever, ever dictate the outcome of an American election. I don't care if the Chinese population in Edison, New Jersey has quadrupled in the last year. Chinese should never dictate the outcome of an election. Americans should. Carton and Rossi went on to make derogatory comments about Asians in non-political areas and spoke in mock Asian accents. That's good fun. An afternoon talk radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week, an oh-so-copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
The sun of the judgment. See the sun.
Ladies and gentlemen, how's business? Well, depends on what business you're in. The sale of military weapons to other countries, including many that were once barred from making such purchases, has increased sharply since 9/11, according to a study by a New York research group. The World Policy Institute, a group based at the New School University, says the nation, United States, has expanded the sales of weapons to countries that were once prohibited from receiving American goods because of their poor human rights records. The largest aid program increased 68% from 2001 to 2003. More than a half of the top 25 recipients were countries the State Department has defined as undemocratic. Charles Penna, a military specialist at the Libertarian Cato Institute, said while arms transfers were preferable to sending troops, there are risks. Quote, if a regime can use these arms to subdue their own population, Pena said, this could come back to haunt us. We need to be more mindful of the long-term implications, especially in the Muslim world, unquote. Yeah, like we were when we founded Al-Qaeda. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an interesting week. There's that word again for the Bush administration. Despite fears circulated in the media that there was going to be a big showdown in the Senate, Senator John McCain and Senator Ben Nelson seemed to spearhead a bipartisan compromise that at least postponed the question of whether the Senate would be prevented from ever filibustering judicial nominees again. Then later in the week, the House voted for a stem cell research bill that President Bush vowed would be his first veto. And the Senate delayed voting on the Bush administration's UN ambassador, John Bolton, while Democrats try to convince the administration to provide classified documents the Democrats seek to see regarding Bolton requesting top secret stuff from the National Security Administration. Apparently documents his own staff has seen, so they're cleared. But so far, the State Department has said that those documents are irrelevant to the Senate's consideration of Bolton. It sounds like a week worthy of a diary entry.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of a man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential.
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 There are times when a secure, undisclosed location 2 meters below ground, without windows, could seem like a blessing. And in late May, when Washington is cold and gray, and the weather's bad, too, a person could be forgiven for thinking that our view from the secure, undisclosed location was superior. Certainly was better than the view out the window at 1600 Pennsylvania, where my constituent in chief was gazing out at a second term being routinely vandalized by the amateurs in the White House Congressional Relations Office. Somehow these sheep in lobbyist clothing had managed to escape Karl Rove's wrath as they allowed simple legislators to start getting big ideas again about their role in the constitutional scheme of things. Hell, I was a member of Congress once. I knew full well my job was to keep my head down, do what I was told, and wait till President Ford needed a chief of staff who didn't have the stink of Nixon on him. Unfortunately, the windbags on the Hill don't see a presidential aide or even a vice president when they look in the mirror. They see a president. And that's a form of hallucination that's best treated with a heavy dose of tough love from a highly disciplined whip operation. After all, if the job of wrangling lawmakers was supposed to be all understanding and nurturing, the folks who do that job wouldn't be called whips. And so, while that pathetic crew that can't even count votes was spending Memorial Day weekend boning up on their remedial arithmetic, I had to leave some vice presidential fingerprints on a well-chosen set of high-ranking windpipes. Camp David, Saturday, 10:27 a.m.
So, what's your pleasure, Dickie Bird? Iced tea?
Espresso Cappellini? Name your poison.
No, I'm fine, Mr. President. One good thing about living in a facility serviced by Navy Seabees, they do refresh the minibar a couple times a day.
Great. Mm. Hey, listen, just talked to Laura last night, you know, wrapping up her Middle Eastern trip.
Yeah, sure.
So crack you up. You know what she said? She said, confidentially, George, we're really giving too little foreign aid to the Middle East leaders, she says. You know, but most of it, she says, should be in the form of cologne. She's one cool tootsie.
Yes, sir. So, Mr. President, got to be blunt with you.
Yeah.
We're a little concerned over in the secure UL about second-term momentum going down a toilet so big it could hold 1,000 Korans. We've got a lot of important stuff to get done.
Oh, I know.
If it isn't written in legislative stone this calendar year.
Oh, I know. All she wrote, Bill, stick a fork in it, she's done. Mm-hmm. Slim and none, the nun just left town. No, but Dick, as I said in my radio address this morning, by the way, did you hear that kid wrote a good one?
Oh, Mr. President, the total number of people who hear that thing is somewhat less than the total number of engineers on duty at the stations that have to run it.
Well, it was still a good one.
Personally, I don't even know why you continue to do a radio speech every week.
Well, I know I wouldn't normally take this as endorsification, but President Clinton did it.
Well, he only did it because Reagan did it. It made him feel more Reagan-esque.
Well,
and Reagan only did it because he'd been doing those little radio speeches for years, and it made him feel more Reagan-esque.
Well, look, anywho, I still think there's good progress being made. You know, Social Security, sure, it's a battle, but another couple of months of town meetings, a little tighter control over the turnout.
Sir, Social Security is Karl Rove's problem.
All right, well, Iraq, now we're going to get a constitution out of those good people, and then it's good night, Irene. We got a convoy blasting straight out of Baghdad, good buddy.
Mr. President, after the Senate filibuster compromise, as you know, our base went ballistic.
Mm-hmm.
After the delay on the Bolton nomination, these fine people are beginning to seriously wonder whether, in fact, we are God's chosen instrument for this hour.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens, all sorts of alarm bells start going off in the secure UL, if you know what I mean.
I do. I absolutely do, Dick, and I will personally get on the horn to somebody in the Navy about fixing those bells, because no way should that...
Mr. President, we have to save the Bolton nomination, pure and simple. We have to implement a profoundly aggressive nomination protection strategy.
Well, yeah, Condi and I were actually going to have a conference call about maybe releasing some of that information to the Democrat senators to kind of break the seal on that logjam, you know, kind of perk the waters of conflict and dare the Democrats to say, oh, no, he didn't release enough information, or, oh, it was doctored information, you know, then they're the ones.
Mr. President, I'd strongly counsel against capitulating one jot or tittle to people whose only goal is to make you appear to be a lame duck.
No, you're right, Dexter. Got to be the strong, healthy duck, all right.
Yes, sir. And as we've seen this week, your base would much rather see you look strong in defeat than weak in compromise. Yeah. So let's get some photo ops scheduled. You and John Bolton golfing together.
Oh, no way, Jose. I played golf with John Bolton. The guy argued about the score for the whole 9 holes.
Or sailing, or fishing, or standing on the freaking porch together.
Look, Chainus Maximus, I'm perfectly willing to be photographed with John Bolton till the cows come home to roost, you know? But what if our hard line convinces some so-called moderates to peel away from us? You know, we got to think strategistically about this. Look a step and a half or so ahead, don't you think?
Mr. President, if we lose the Bolton nomination by hanging tough, our base will be outraged.
Yeah, that's bad.
Which, in the normal course of events, translates into millions of dollars in contributions.
That's good.
Contributions, I might point out, you don't have to go flying off to 17 fundraising dinners in 18 different states to shake out of them.
So what you're actually saying is it's win, lose, win.
If you go into all the ramifications, sir, it's actually win-win, lose-win, win-win, lose-win.
Got it. But, you know, if we throw John overboard, what about the urgent need for U.N. reform? I mean, the kid even put it in my radio address.
Frankly, Mr. President, given that U.N. reform is a vague chimera and $20 million is actual cash in hand, I just happen to think the need for the $25 million is just a little bit more urgent.
Well, I just remembered that Camaro is a cheap little piece of tinfoil crap. You know, beige one's got to be even worse. All right, Dick Master. Cajone's out it is. Let's photo op me and John until the cows come home alone.
That's not a half bad idea, sir. Consider it done before you even made the decision. It's my good fortune to spend a part of every day being able to see a vision of true presidential leadership. It happens every time I get the opportunity to take a glance in the mirror. In the partial diary for the latter part of May 2005, sincerely yours, Dick Cheney, confidential.
Coconut tree, discussing things as they are said to be. Say one to the other, now listen, you two. There's a certain rumor that can't be true. That man descended from our noble race. The very idea is a big disgrace. Just say no monkey ever deserted his wife, starve a baby, and rent her life. Yeah, the monkey speak his mind. And you never know a mother monk to leave her babies with others to bunk. Pass them on from one to another till they scarcely knew who was their mother.
Confused.
Yeah. The monkey speaks his mind. And another thing you'll never see, a monkey build a fence around a coconut tree. And let other coconuts go to waste, forbidding all the other monkeys to come and taste. What if I put a fence around this tree? Starvation would force you to steal from me. Yeah, the monkey speaks his mind. Here's another thing a monkey won't do. Go out at night and get on a stoop. Use a gun, a club or a knife to take another monkey's life. Yeah, man descended the worthless bum, but brothers from us, he did not come. The monkey speaks his mind.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, this being the show and all, it's time for me to read the trades for you. News of the trade, in the trades. They're rough. Topic, this from the New York Times Media Department column. thing. Top executives in the National Basketball Association are suggesting they would consider allowing advertiser logos to appear on player uniforms if the price was right. But Trip Wheeler, a senior vice president at the Radiate Sports Group, a division of the Radiate Group unit of the Omnicom Group. I'm reading this just for that credit. Trip Wheeler, a senior vice president at the Radiate Sports Group, a division of the Radiate Group unit of the Omnicom Group, said logos on jerseys might not be worth what the NBA would demand. Quote, if you asked fans what logos were on Major League Soccer or European soccer uniforms, I don't think they would be able to readily recall them, Mr. Wheeler said. Quote, if it's just a logo, you don't get the impact. If it's called the Coca-Cola Bulls, now that's something. Unquote. Mr. Wheeler. From Advertising Age, days after financial services giant Morgan Stanley informed print publications that its ads must be automatically pulled from any edition containing, quote, objectionable editorial coverage, unquote, global energy giant BP has adopted a similar press strategy. According to a copy of a memo on the letterhead of its media buying agency, Mindshare, please share your mind, the global marketer has adopted a zero-tolerance policy toward negative editorial coverage. It demands that advertising accepting publications inform BP in advance of any news, text, or visuals they plan to publish that directly mention the company, a competitor, or the oil and energy business. A spokeswoman for Mindshare refused to comment on the memo, calling it a client matter. Client matters. Weekends on ABC. And weekdays, too. BP spent almost $100 million on advertising in 2004. One former publisher and longtime magazine industry executive who spoke on the condition of anonymity, don't tell Mike Isikoff, said that magazines are not in the financial position today to buck rules from advertisers, that's a quote, and predicted that such moves will continue. Another magazine executive who had not heard about BP's memo said his company has unwritten guidelines with advertisers from several industries, including auto, airlines, and tobacco, to pull their ads if related negative stories are in the issue. These cases, the executive said, occur more with news magazines than lifestyle ones. Huh. The executive said, I think it's okay to have systems in place to pull advertisers out, but clearly we don't show them stories ahead of time. He additionally called the BP memo, quote, a stupid request. It makes you think these guys are hiding something, unquote. It does? From editor and publisher, the Virginian Pilot of Norfolk, Virginia, has dropped a popular syndicated car column that was the subject of complaints by local car dealers. It's Click and Clack Talk Cars by Tom and Ray Maliazzi. A reporter called the deputy managing editor of the paper. The newsroom wasn't consulted, according to the deputy managing editor. The reporter was referred to D. Carpenter, the paper's publisher. Carpenter confirmed the cancellation of Click and Clack Talk Cars and said several local auto dealers and he himself had been bothered by the, quote, irreverent car column at the times it went, quote, over the top during the past couple of years. Sometimes it's very funny, said Carpenter, and sometimes it isn't. But the president publisher emphasized that the key to the dropping decision was that the column appeared in an advertiser-supported automotive section that's basically produced for car dealers. Carpenter said other sections of the paper can publish material that might upset advertisers. No, of course I'm not commenting. Why would I have to comment when I read the trades for you? Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I think Clack was more offensive than Click, but I could be wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ 7.415 megahertz on Channel 108 at Sirius Satellite Radio, home of no one but me. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and available on your computer at two different locations around the globe via the internet whenever you want it. Live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like Click and Clack being inoffensive if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Service is by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau, and a deep swooping bow to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks for their help. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.